Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app.
Buy one, get one free on our full-line sale of delicious, fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6-ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
As you may or may not know, I started my journey to being one of the hosts on Writing Excuses by going on the Writing Excuses cruise. And while, to be honest, I can't promise that for you, I can promise that you go on the cruise this year, you'll have a lot of fun. The entire cast of Writing Excuses will be there. We'll be sailing from Los Angeles on the Navigator of the Seas from September 19th to 27th. And we're going to stop in three places we've never been to before: Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. The cruise has seminars, lectures, exercises, group sessions, group dinners, partying. It's just everything you want, all in one big package: relaxation, learning, and writing, all while sailing the Mexican Riviera. For tickets and more information, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 19, Episode 28. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on character. Internal versus external identity.
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard. Both internally and externally, I insist.
It's nice when those match up. And I think one of the interesting things about this topic is that often that those are two things that are in tension with each other, right? And we're going to mostly focus on The Cook today. Again, one of C.L. Clarke's stories, but we might bounce around between all three stories a little bit here. What I love about The Cook as a story is how external everything is in the story. It's an incredibly sensory story. C.L. Clarke is describing smells and sensations and sounds and action, and very little what anybody is thinking. We get some sense of desire, but that desire and that affection is expressed through contact, through touch, through, you know, action throughout the story. And for a story that has chosen to move all of the battles off screen and only focus on the action inside this tavern, it is still a remarkably physical and touchable and sensory story. What do you all think about how character is communicated through all of those external indicators, and how do we understand the interiority of these people?
The first external indicator we get for the identity of our main character is the sentence that I leaned into last week. I'm standing in the common room and the other warriors straddle chairs. Other warriors. This character's a warrior. We don't know what warrior means. But because we have been mimetically linked to Pathfinder, D&D, fantasy role-playing game, whatever, we have a picture in our head that is good enough to tell the rest of the story. We're talking about somebody who fights for a living, maybe a soldier of fortune, maybe a mercenary, maybe a to use D&D terminology, a murder hobo. But that is our external. The internal, I think the internal we get in the first line, which is the first time I see her. Is it the first time I see her? It's just a glimpse. Mm-hmm. Well, externally, you're a warrior. Internally, you're paying attention to who's working in the kitchen.
Yeah. And I think the things that you see really tell a lot about the character. So I'm looking, a bit further down, there's the line, her blouse is half unbuttoned, leading my eyes down the V between her breasts. Now, if you see a half unbuttoned blouse, there are a lot of things you could think about it. You could think, that should be fully buttoned. Like, how dare you show so much skin? Or your eyes can be led down. Or you can be wondering about the price of fabric. And all of those things will tell you something very different about the character who's thinking them, about the character who's making the observation. So even though we don't get the interiority looking at what the character focuses on and how they interpret it tells us a lot about what's going on the inside.
My last name is Taylor. I look at the half unbuttoned blouse and think, there's a free button on the floor somewhere.
Even the next line, the sheen of sweat like condensation makes me thirsty. We're getting interior reaction through exterior reaction, right? Because it's that sensory thing of now she's thirsty. She's thinking about this. And, you know, we completely understand where her brain's at. We know what is happening mm-hmm. here very, very clearly in a way that is very compelling and moving as well.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I just want to flip back up to the top, this line, my stomach growls a monster's growl. Yeah. I should be slain. It's like that line is actually carrying so much about the way this character is thinking about themselves. Like, yes, they're in this band of warriors, but they're aware of what they're about to do. Mm-hmm. It's not just that they're hungry, but that the word monster in this context is carrying a lot of weight of establishing this character is not entirely comfortable with what they're about to set out to do.
And I think, and again, this is the principle, you know, you carry about 80% of what you're getting out of a story into the story with you. I hear that, you know, monsters growl, I should be slain. And I am imagining that party having conversations around other dinners where somebody burps and somebody else says, oh my gosh, it's a bug bladder. We got to go down into your belly and kill that. And they joke about those kinds of noises. This is not the first time we've made the monster metaphor in order to relieve tension.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you another tool, which is something called trauma points. Now, previously I had talked about, in the first episode, ability, role, relationship, and status. And I promise I am going to dig into those a little bit more. But I also want you to be thinking about something called trauma points. These are things that have happened in a character's past. You don't necessarily have to know what they are. But there's basically three things: safety, connection, and empowerment. And when you look at this character and the way this character is reacting to her, to the cook, we see a lot of stuff about connection. And also, the character has been sitting, we never know her name, by the way. Mm-hmm. The character has been sitting by herself. But she's in this band of people, and she's the first time she sees her. So we see a lot of things where she's looking for that connection, which then ties in with the ability, role, relationship, and status that I referenced in our previous episode. So relationship is all about your loyalty to others. Sometimes your loyalty to yourself, your loyalty to others. And one of the things that you'll see shift over the course of this is where her loyalty lies and what is important to her. At the beginning, we are very focused on, you know, we see the woman, but there's also the other warriors. By the time we get to the end, we are not thinking about the other people, in part because a lot of them are dead. But that loyalty has fully shifted at that point. You can mm-hmm. tell by the time you get to this, the end of this, based on her word choice and her sentence structure, that this character is not going to go back out adventuring again. Mm-hmm. This character has come home.
She's done with the war by that point, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, you mentioning the trauma points is such an interesting aspect as well, because it just feels like such a big hook for the character as well. You know, only a few paragraphs into the story, again, not a very long story, but she goes out to war and comes back. And then there's this beautiful paragraph here, describing the meal that she served on their return. But there's butter and rosemary and warmed carrots that crunch when I bite them, and small roasted potatoes, skin crisped, but flesh so soft that I have to swallow tears. And so like that moment where she begins to cry, you sort of feel the weight and the grief that war has brought to her as she's gone out, fought this battle, and come back. And then that's followed immediately with my friends hoot and cheer and pound the tables with their blessedly finally empty fists. That they're not carrying weapons anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, from that monster line in the opening to this, we're getting a sense of the weight of trauma that fighting is putting on this person as, you know, she has to bear all of this violence, all of this weight over the course of this.
That paragraph also reminds me of something we've talked about in other episodes about leaving space for the reader, because it's that flesh so soft that ... I have to swallow tears. Oof. And it's really up to you to decide, like, what, there's a moment there. Mm-hmm. It's like watching, if you've ever watched someone react to something and you know they're having a moment, you don't know exactly what it is, but you can see that the way that it's affecting them, but not exactly what the image is that they have in their head. And I actually think that the ... there is more powerful than if you know, C.L. Clarke actually told us exactly what is there.
Yeah.
Because in some ways, I don't even think the character herself can express it. I don't think the character can express it, and therefore it can't be expressed on the page because we are within that that headspace.
It's funny. In my head, this is a grisly, gory story. I feel that, like, the visceral horror of war written into the story. But there's very little described in it. You know, even the wound at the end is very obliquely referred to, right? We don't get any direct description. For a story that's so, like, bodies and flesh and people's reactions and hunger, for all of that, the author really pulls back on portraying the true gore aspect of it. But boy, do I feel it in a line like this.
Yeah, it's, again, that negative space and allowing the reader to put themselves into the character and supply some of their own emotion to the moment. Like, what would I feel like if I had returned from something so horrific that I can't actually even think about it? I can only think about the food.
Exactly.
Before Mary Robinette keeps her promise about explaining this toolbox, we're going to have to go on break. And when we come back, I have a question.
Hi, I'm Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesack and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Want to avoid common pitfalls and get straight to the insights that drive success? Join me and recognize names like John Mackey of Whole Foods and Joe DeSena of Spartan as we unpack the hard-earned lessons from their journeys. Ready to streamline your path to success? Listen to Let Me Save You 25 Years on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6-ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's this show on Netflix that I want you to watch, and I want to tell you as little as possible because the hook is also a spoiler. I know, usually we tell you all about why you should watch this thing. In this case, the show is called Bodies. It has strong procedural murder mystery vibes and also this whole other layer going on that I can't tell you about. If you trust me, just watch Bodies. Go in knowing as little about it as you possibly can. Don't watch the trailer. Just cue it up and watch it. That's Bodies on Netflix.
Mary Robinette, this toolbox, name the four things again.
Ability, role, relationship, and status.
Okay, those are nice, you know, pointers that, you know, draw a little valley and mountain graph for what a character might look like in the absolute abstract. Can those points be, like, shifted around as a way to visualize the character arc? Like, this is a story in which ability goes up and relationship goes down or something like that?
Yeah. So what you're looking at with these is that each of them represents an aspect of self. And our self-identity is sacred to us. We will defend it. We will hold on to it. We don't want it to change. And so what you're looking at is what the character values about themselves most. They may value their abilities most. They may value their responsibility most. The person who is like, yeah, I always get all of my homework checked in. You know, I've designed a really good lesson plan. With loyalties, the relationship, I am a good daughter. I am a good wife. I'm a good friend. And then with status, you know, people look up to me. People fear me. I have this. This gives me the power to make these changes. But within those, the character may have things that they are afraid of. So you can also have these other aspects, which is I don't have the ability to do this. I'm incapable of doing this. So you can think of them as each of them as being kind of a hole that the character is either trying to fill or run away from. They're taking strength from, or they're fleeing. And it depends kind of on a given moment and kind of how they self-define about it. Particularly if it's linked to a trauma point. So if ability is linked to empowerment as a trauma point, then they're going to be afraid that they don't have the ability to deal with things. So it's going to be something they're more likely to run from. Not always. There's different ways of responding to trauma than running. Sometimes you'll double down. But what this tells you is that you can look at a character's starting place, and a lot of the conflicts in the character, their internal identity, happen when you put tension on those, when you pit two aspects of self against each other. And what you're doing is you're having the character question their own values and then realign them over the course of the story. So a character may move from, you know, I really value my skill as a warrior, I'm really good at it, to ending up with, what I value most is my loyalty to my friends. You see this a lot with things where it's like, I'm going to become the most powerful person in the world. Oh no, it's actually my family that's the most important thing to me. Mm-hmm. And it's that realignment of values that's where the character tension can come from, because the character is all the time at the beginning trying to hold on to this idea of, I'm about power. And then they are making a series of choices that they are increasingly aware are the wrong choice, which we particularly see when we get into Your Eyes, My Beacon. The character makes choices that they know are the wrong choice.
So let me try and reflect this back onto the cook. This warrior is probably placing pretty high on the I have ability. You know, I am willing to go out and swing a sword at things. Mm-hmm. And there is a measure of personal empowerment there. Relationship is the camaraderie with the other warriors, not a single interpersonal thing. By the end of the story, ability appears to have perhaps let this warrior down a bit. You know, they've suffered a lot at the hands of the enemy, and they're accepting a much closer relationship with just one person rather than the camaraderie of soldiers.
Yeah, and you can also, like, you can take that and you could shift the focus of it by and how it executes on the page by saying that the warrior focuses on their role. It's like, I have a job and I go and I do it and mm-hmm. I do it well, but it's just a job. Or looking at the loyalties and thinking, you know, the camaraderie to my friends versus the camaraderie to, yeah, you can push all of those around.
Yeah, I've been thinking about, as you've been talking about these four different things, I've been thinking about them in the way mm-hmm. of a cook, because this is called The Cook, and so my mind is focused. But it makes me think of the difference between thinking, like, I'm really great at mixing flavors together. Mm-hmm. I'm really great at picking the right spices. To me, that's an ability thing, mm-hmm. versus saying, like, I'm a chef. Like, that's who I am. That's how people identify me. That's my role in the, you know, I yep. am, that's my role. Relationship, I feed people. Like, there are people mm-hmm. who would say, like, they would never call themselves a chef, but they'd be like, I feed my family. I feed people. I make sure that they are really enjoying themselves. And then you might have somebody who's like, I'm a James Beard award-winning, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. super chef. And, like, I am, my status is that people will come to me from near and far for my cooking. And those are all cooks. But those are all cooks that view themselves differently, have a different emphasis on whether they care about the ability, the role, the relationship, or the status. Is that right?
And exactly. I want to be best friends with all of those people.
Who will feed you
because
in different
reasons.
Ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. That's exactly how that works.
And there's something so interesting happening with the status mm-hmm. part of this in this story, because you get the sense that as the soldiers, they should have status because they have martial power, right? They mm-hmm. have the threat of violence when they come in the room. And you feel that in the description as they're like pinching the butts of like these people. And you get a sense of like these warriors have taken over this space in a really raucous way that is very not necessarily respectful of the people who are there.
Yeah,
right?
There's not a lot to grasp.
Exactly. There's not a lot of kindness being shown here. And there's a lot of power being shown here. But by the middle of the story, the power is completely inverted because it is the cook who is providing them the only thing they care about now, which is food, which are these, you know, potatoes that are so tender that they're crying over them, right? You know, it's that inversion of power and that reconception of what power is and what status is over the course of the story, I think, is so much of what drives it home. It matters that she's a cook of all things, right?
There's this line that I love in that second encounter. She is cleaned, but it still smells like yeast, that fermenting precursor to everything I've missed for months.
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, there's so much, there's like a double duty there. Mm-hmm. It's like not just the food, but also the civilization and also this particular woman, like, and the comfort. Like, there's so many things happening in that one sentence.
Well, and then the inversion for the third time she comes back, which is she unwraps me like a parcel she has waited too long for, which is a very similar thing in terms of the longing for, wanting to encounter this. But then the smell assaults us both, and the battlefield stitching is an insult to precision, right? She's come back as this creature of war that has suffered at this in a way that is so in contrast to all of the smells we've seen in the story up until this point, right? And again, this is why I'm like, wow, the story is really gory, even though there's nothing here other than the smell is an assault, but I smell it. I know what is.
My brain says, wait, that is a wound on the torso and it smells that bad. I'm sorry, it's gone septic. You're going to die because we can't amputate it.
Yeah.
But a good poultice. A really good magical poultice.
That's why we got to cook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something else I really love in this story, which maybe is related to what we're talking about, maybe not, but I think something, there's a line in here about the color of skin. Has anyone ever told you that you've skinned the color of caramelized onions? Which I loved on two levels. One, it's just a really great line from a, you know, cook that is like extra rizzy. But also it's something that, like, we're often told sort of not to describe skin color generally of like brown skin people using something that can be consumed, because it's like you're viewing the person as if you want to consume them. But here, because it's being done by a character, it's not being done by the author. It comes through the view of the cook, who is the person who understands consumption, what it is to consume something, what it is to prepare something better than anyone. It is this beautiful moment that makes the main character fall in love.
Yeah. Well, and she's picked something so delicious, right?
Yeah.
She's picked something that, you know, is prized by cooks and takes care and effort and all of these things. And so there's a ton being communicated in this moment that is caramelized onions.
She's picked something where, when the onions have been caramelized perfectly, that's the color. Oh, yeah. And that's the color on you.
But it's not just that. It's not just that. It is also the nature of what causes caramelization to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Onions gone soft, brown, and sweet, almost burnt. Like, this is someone who's come back from war and almost burnt. And the other thing, the line right after the caramelized onions line, we've talked at some point about finding common ground. She brushes my scarred hand with burn calloused fingertips. These are both people who have been scarred by their jobs. And that is a commonality that they have between them. And that's a really, like, again, when you're looking at trying to express character and between these two people, trying to find the places where their experiences overlap, even if it's from different reasons, they both know what it is to be injured. Mm-hmm. And it's a lovely thing. And it also, I suspect, means that they both know what it's like to be injured emotionally in addition to physically as well.
Yeah. There's so many beautiful parallels in this story. On that note, I have a little bit of homework for you, which is to pick a major character in your story and write two short summaries of the character arc. One using your original motivation and goal, and the second, but with a different motivation, but the same goal.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Are you struggling to find time and energy for creative work or writing? Sandra Taylor has a new book that might help. Structuring Life to Support Creativity is a resource book for creative people who want to make more space in the life they have for the creative work they want to do. This book is drawn from 30 years' experience in juggling creative work along with everything else life throws at us. Inside the book, you can find such topics as managing your mental load, arranging your physical space, how to come back to your creative work after life goes sideways, the problem of motivation, and more. The whole book is written with a focus on adapting for how your brain works instead of trying to change you to fit expectations. The book is not prescriptive and instead provides concepts and tools so you can find the ones that work for you. This makes the book Autism, ADHD, and Neurodivergent friendly. Pre-order your copy today at sandrataylor.com. Just make sure that Taylor has an ER in the Taylor.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.